Today on Vox Talks, what's next for Britain's furloughed workers? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. 9 million jobs have been furloughed in the UK during the coronavirus pandemic. But which people were doing these jobs and what's going to happen to them now? Abby Adams-Prassel at Oxford University is one of a team of authors who produced a new CEPR discussion paper, and that uses survey data to find out more about how employers implemented furloughing, how the people who were furloughed reacted, and what we can learn in time for the next crisis. When I spoke to Abby recently, I began by asking her how the UK's coronavirus job retention scheme, as it was called, worked in practice.
The coronavirus job retention scheme, otherwise just referred to as the furloughing scheme, is an emergency short-time work policy. So it allows employers to cut their workers' hours with the government stepping in to top up the paying of salaries. And really what it's aiming to do is keep worker and firm matches together through the pandemic, rather than having firms just temporarily lay off employees. Now, when it was first introduced, furloughed workers weren't allowed to do any work for their employer, and in return, the government would pay 80% of workers' salary up to £2,500 a month.
And how does the UK compare to other countries in its furlough scheme?
So I think there are really two big differences with the likes of a more established European short-time work scheme. So the first was that initially in the UK scheme, there were really big restrictions on what work and furloughed employees could do. So actually, until July, workers on the scheme had to do no work for their employer at all whilst furloughed. Now, this is in like pretty big contrast to other short-time work schemes in Italy, in France, in Germany, which allow for much more flexible reductions in hours and for people to work part-time while still having government subsidies for the wage. And in principle, this seems kind of like a much better idea because it allows firms to more easily keep their businesses going and also to kind of stop any depreciation of kind of human capital, like kind of keep workers actually involved in the firm. The other big difference is about the timing of the scheme and how it applies across different types of sectors and different firms. So the UK scheme is a blanket policy which applies with the same kind of parameters across all different sectors, and it's set to end everywhere in the economy in October. Now, this again is in contrast to other schemes which allow for firms to apply for assistance normally for up to around a year. So this is shorter. And the other thing is that because the UK scheme has been kind of dreamt up, if you like, in response to the pandemic, there's been a lot of uncertainty about the length of the scheme, who it's going to apply to, are there going to be changes in the generosity, which again, there's kind of been much more certainty, I think, in the running of these more established schemes through the crisis.
Now, Abby, you've done some analysis on how the UK scheme's working, but it's literally going on right now. So where do you get your data from?
So with my colleagues, we've been running real-time labour market surveys since the beginning of the crisis. So our first one was run in the UK 2 days after lockdown started, so right at the end of March. And then we've run more surveys in April and May. And we're going to be running our next set of surveys probably in September or October, when the furloughing scheme is going to be coming to the end in the UK. And we'd initially thought we'd be moving into more of a recovery period at that time. But anyway, we'll see how that goes.
So let's look at some of the things you found out. First of all, who was furloughed? Who was more likely to be furloughed?
So perhaps unsurprisingly, workers who can't do a lot of their work from home have been more likely to be furloughed than those in kind of shut down sectors. I think kind of more surprisingly for us are the different characteristics of workers who have been furloughed, even when you control for different aspects of the jobs that they're doing. So what we found is that, I found particularly striking, is that women have been significantly more likely to be furloughed than men doing the same type of job. And what we're finding is that there's evidence that differences in childcare responsibility have been playing an important role in this. So what we found is that mothers have been much more likely to ask to be furloughed by their employers as opposed to fathers. And that this is even when we control for like a really rich set of job characteristics. But correspondingly, we don't find any gender gap in the decision to ask to be furloughed amongst childless workers.
That's very interesting. And now also we've got the government paying 80% of the salary. Are the employers topping up the other 20%?
So we're finding that the majority of workers are reporting that their employers are topping them up. So about 70% of furloughed workers in our surveys said that they're receiving this discretionary top up from their employer. However, you know, it's that 70% isn't kind of equal across all types of jobs or all types of workers. So what we found is that workers on higher incomes are much more likely to have been topped up, which reduces this kind of inequality, if you like, reducing effect of the scheme. We also find that women have also been less likely to have their salaries topped up beyond the 80%. Now, this is partially explained, however, because of these differences in the types of jobs that women do.
Now, you also pointed out that you're not meant to be working when you were furloughed. From your evidence, did people stick to this?
Our evidence would suggest not. So what we find is that our surveys were occurring when you weren't supposed to be doing any work at all on furlough. And we found that the majority of workers said that they at least continued to do some work whilst furloughed. So about 60% of furloughed workers said that they had done at least, like, you know, had worked positive hours. This, again, is mainly concentrated amongst those who can do a lot of their work from home, and especially men. So for people who said they could do at least half of their job from home, only about 20% of them report doing 0 hours. And I mean, in terms of the interpretation of this, I think it's kind of tricky, because actually, if people could work from home whilst furloughed, actually it seems like potentially a good thing in terms of the overall kind of output and activity in the economy that they were continuing to do some work whilst furloughed rather than doing absolutely nothing at all. I think one of the kind of key issues we see with this is that it's introducing kind of some inequity between complying firms and non-complying firms. And that might not be the kind of dimension on which the government might want to be subsidising different types of employers.
We're reaching the end of the scheme now. It's being wound down. At least, as we know at the moment, it's intended to be wound down. What do we know from the people you surveyed about who doesn't really want to go back to the office, or who is expecting not to be invited back to the office at all?
Yeah, so we asked people who are currently furloughed still, would they prefer to return to work even at 80% of pay? And we found that like 60% of people said they would want to return from work. Again, though, we see big differences across occupations. So workers actually in food preparation, in sales, are much less likely to be willing to return to work than those who, say, are in doing kind of computer, mathematical, architectural occupations, which again, I think, creates this tension with the type of, you know, get back on the high street type message that the government is kind of putting out quite strongly at the moment. The other thing that we found really striking was that employees who don't have access to paid sick leave beyond the statutory minimum provided by the government are significantly less likely to want to return to work. And we think this really highlights this important trade-off between kind of health risks and economic risks. So workers in the UK who don't have an adequate safety net if they get sick appear to be much more cautious about exposing themselves to health risks at work by actually moving back into the workplace, which seems natural. We asked as well, what did people think about their likelihood of losing their job before August, you know, because we were asking earlier in the pandemic. So we find that furloughed workers are much more pessimistic, 15 percentage points more pessimistic of thinking about losing their job than non-furloughed workers. And that, especially amongst when we control for all the aspects of different of the jobs that these people are doing, it's especially furloughed workers who say they could actually do a lot of their job from home who are pretty pessimistic about keeping their job long term. And again, I think that this makes sense. So for these workers, it seems less likely that social distancing measures are the primary reason that they might be on furlough, because they can do their work from home. And so it might be something more about the type of firm they're in or the type of kind of sector they're in. And so, you know, for these workers who can do their job from home, actually, potentially they shouldn't be prevented through the furlough scheme of moving to more viable matches.
Abby, can we learn anything from this that will be useful in future, the next time that we have to do short-time work in the UK?
So I think the first thing is that really short-time work schemes should allow for part-time work. And the fact that the UK scheme initially ruled this out was really quite perverse, because this flexibility to allow people to keep working is one key reason to prefer a short-time work scheme over some kind of like recall or like temporary unemployment. And the fact that very few people could do zero of their job from home, it would have been better all round if people had been encouraged to work from home earlier in the pandemic, both in terms of the output losses, but also in terms of encouraging workers and firms to make investments in the ability to work from home. So what we've seen in the UK is quite uneven growth across different occupations in workers' reported ability to work from home. And again, I kind of think this makes sense. If people are furloughed and aren't working from home, why would firms try and use the time in the pandemic to actually invest in new technologies, invest in new ways of working to facilitate working, you know, in a more compatible way with, you know, with all the pandemic restrictions? The other thing is about the timings of these schemes. And here, there's a real tension in short-time work schemes, because you want to provide support for long enough to actually prevent those inefficient layoffs from the temporary hard shifts. But what you don't want to do is subsidize like bad matches indefinitely and kind of prevent reallocation and the economy adapting to whatever new normal we're in. So what we're seeing is that really these schemes should be flexible in terms of how they're applied across different sectors, rather than this blanket policy that we currently have in the UK. And the other thing which I think our results point to is potentially this relationship between the ending of furloughing and some sensitivity to what's going on with schooling and childcare. So this fact that women have been more likely to ask to be furloughed really suggests that there could be a risk that women, you know, mothers could end up getting forced out of the labour market if the furloughing scheme ends whilst there's severe disruption still in schooling. And the final thing, sorry, I know I'm going on, is actually really not right about short-time work schemes, but about a kind of public safety net in terms of provision of sick pay. So us finding that workers without sick pay are much less likely to want to return from furlough would suggest again that there needs to be more done potentially to support and ensure workers who are exposing themselves to catching the virus, you know, to actually put like kind of provide them some insurance for that. On the other hand, what we also find is that workers who haven't been furloughed during the pandemic, they're much more likely to have said that they had kept working even if they were showing signs of kind of, you know, of coronavirus symptoms. So what you want to do is have a social security system which means that people who, you know, can work and feel safe to, but also those who are sick also are incentivized not to go out into the workplace and stay at home.
You're definitely not going on. This is great information, Abby. Thank you very much. You have certainly been working from home.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much, Tim.
You can read more about this research in CEPR discussion paper 15194. It's called Furloughing. The authors are Abby Adams-Prassel, Teodora Boneva, Marta Golin, and Christopher Rao. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. We bring you the most innovative economic research every week, so do subscribe to Vox Talks, and that means you'll never miss an episode. And remember, there are 10 years of Vox Talks at voxeu.org/vox-talks.